From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Warming water conditions have been causing big shifts in Alaska's ecosystems. While some species have been hit especially hard by the rise in ocean temps, some, like rockfish and sablefish, for example, appear to have thrived in the warmer waters. High-frequency radar offers new ways to track and monitor ocean currents, and the list of potential users wanting access to the systems is long and varied. And finally, Sitka recently celebrated the concept of Salmon Nation, which emphasizes the culture and environment that unite coastal salmon communities, regardless of which country, state, or province one resides. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
The blob is the ominous nickname used by fishermen and marine biologists to describe warm ocean conditions that appeared in the North Pacific in 2014. It lingered for about 2 years, and the negative impacts on Alaska's marine ecosystem were widely reported. But for sablefish and rockfish, the blob wasn't a bad thing. New research indicates that they were thriving during this period. KHNS's Henry Leisha reports from Haines.
Pacific rockfish were drastically overfished up and down the West Coast in the 20th century. In Alaska, most of the fleet wasn't local.
You know, our story up here is a little bit different than what the story is down in the West Coast.
That's Pete Holson. He assesses rockfish stocks in Alaska for NOAA Fisheries.
Up here, the story is more like, you know, the Japanese fleets and Russian fleets just decimated not just rockfish, but most of our groundfish species.
Rockfish numbers have rebounded thanks in part to careful management. Fisheries managers have slowly increased commercial catch limits. And although it is not the most valuable fish, rockfish now makes up a sizable amount of the trawl catches in Kodiak and the western Gulf of Alaska. But Holson says it isn't just management practices that led to the rebound in the population.
I mean, of course, we'd love to like pat ourselves on the back, but I don't think we can say it's just that. I think there's definitely been some natural environmental things that have occurred that have just helped the population.
Oregon scientists are now investigating how the blob led to a banner year for juvenile rockfish. During the blob's final months in 2016, researchers at NOAA's Northwest Fisheries Science Center noticed dramatic changes in the ecosystem off the Oregon coast. Lori Whitecamp says that while she was conducting a survey of Chinook salmon, she was struck by the changes she was seeing in other marine species.
If you tow a net out in the ocean, you catch a lot of other stuff besides salmon. And so it was really these other species that it was like, wow, that's really, really different.
Whitecamp says her net was getting clogged by all sorts of unusual creatures.
For example, one of the things we started catching are pyrosomes, these, what are they called, sea pickles, I guess.
She noticed high numbers of juvenile rockfish as well.
We just had this big bloom of those. And talking to researchers up and down the coast from California to British Columbia and up into Alaska even, other people were seeing the same event, the same recruitment event.
Whitecamp and her colleagues recently published a paper on their findings. They suggest that a decline in jellyfish that eat juvenile rockfish helped their numbers. Holson says that while Alaska experienced the same spike in juvenile rockfish in 2016, it's unclear if it had anything to do with other species.
I don't think we have a good understanding yet of like why rockfish seem to be doing well in these conditions and these other fish don't. You know, it seems to be coinciding with these warmer temperatures. And what the mechanisms of that is, we don't really know yet, but at least kind of points us in a direction that we can start asking more questions and doing a little bit more research.
Other groundfish species, such as sablefish, experienced similar booms during the blob. Fishermen are already looking at ways to protect them until they reach maturity and can be sold commercially. Holson says at this point, the increase in juvenile rockfish hasn't had any impact on the way Alaska's fisheries are managed. Rockfish can live upwards of 100 years, and it takes a long time for them to grow to adulthood. So stock assessments focus more on adult rockfish populations. Whitecamp says that unprecedented ocean conditions make it difficult to make predictions about the future of commercial fisheries.
With these recent unusual conditions, there's winners and losers. You know, we're expecting predictable resources that we've harvested for, you know, millennia in the case of a lot of people on the coast. And things are changing in ways that we don't really understand. And some things are doing good and others not so much.
In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
For years, coastal cities across the lower 48 have been using high-frequency radar systems to monitor and track ocean currents. Now, the University of Alaska Fairbanks College of Fisheries and Sciences is bringing similar technology to the Bering Strait region. KNOM's JoJo Phillips spoke with a researcher from UAF about the potential benefits high-frequency radar could offer to Western Alaska.
We have a new project where we want to monitor the surface currents in Bering Strait.
Rachel Potter is a physical oceanographer with UAF. Last week, she visited Nome and gave a presentation on ocean currents and the importance of collecting data on them. There are a variety of existing methods for measuring ocean currents, but each has its own limitations. One example is NOAA research vessels tracking currents while conducting yearly surveys. Potter says these measurements are precise,
but you're only getting the data where your ship is at that time. So it's great to compare to the other data that you're collecting while you're on the cruise, but it's not great to tell you after you left there what happened at that spot 3 days before or after.
Another strategy is to use moorings. These, according to Potter, produce accurate data but are not time effective and can be expensive to place and retrieve. Meanwhile, data from a radar system can be collected both remotely and more frequently.
We're saving a lot of money by not going out on ships. We're getting a lot more coverage than we normally would.
Currently, UAF has three operational sites in Alaska, Wainwright, Utqiagvik, and Cape Simpson. Potter has spent the last several months testing two more locations, Wales and Shishmaref. She says she chose those two communities because of their geographic proximity to the coast and because both communities have electricity and Wi-Fi. Robert Tokiana Jr. sits on the Wales Native Corporation Board. He sees the community's partnership with UAF as mutually beneficial.
Hopefully we'll start working with the scientific community and working with our community to come up with the best knowledge base for our, not only our community residents, but also anybody that hunts and subsists around Wales and Shishmaref.
Potter agrees and points to the success local subsistence hunters in Wainwright have had utilizing the radar data.
Even for subsistence harvests, a lot of the data that we get near shore to Wainwright and Barrow is exactly where we see these eddies and upwelling is exactly where they go whaling every year and have success.
Besides benefits to subsistence users, Potter has a long list of applications for the radar systems. The National Weather Service could ingest the data to improve marine and sea ice forecasting, and NOAA could use the data to track the spread of harmful algal blooms and potentially even toxic spills. Reporting in Nome, I'm JoJo Phillips.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A meeting held in Sitka at the end of October set out to explore a new way of thinking around communities, resources, development, and even government. It's called Salmon Nation. And a central tenet is that coastal communities in Alaska, Canada, and the Pacific Northwest have connections that transcend borders. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report from Sitka.
Well, my name is Yakutlas Larry Jorgensen. I'm a resident of Bella, which is a Heitsuk community. I've lived here for over 40 years.
This is an excerpt from a film made by Salmon Nation explaining the core idea. When you look at the environment and culture of the region, the political borders start to seem a bit contrived.
Sort of relate their lives somehow to all the wonderful things that salmon do and somehow nurture your soul.
Ian Gill is a writer based in Vancouver, British Columbia, and a former CEO of EcoTrust in the U.S., Canada, and Australia. He's one of four individuals behind Salmon Nation, an effort to initiate systemic change in the way communities function from the Sacramento River in California to the Yukon River in Alaska. National governments, he believes, have dropped the ball.
The systems that currently govern how we live and how we divide and conquer, mostly ourselves, are failing us. We're seeing a failure of policy from Washington, D.C. in particular, and Ottawa, frankly, which affects me as somebody who lives in Canada. Those systems, especially when it comes to issues like climate change, are manifestly failing our nations. But it's especially acute when you get out to the edges, like on the West Coast here. I mean, almost none of what happens back there makes any sense to us here.
Gill is not promoting political revolution. Rather, Salmon Nation is an attempt to define a bioregion and reimagine the economy and environment in a way that celebrates and harnesses the resources of the region rather than, well, trashes them.
We're still obsessed with this model of extracting resources and often getting a very low value for them as a way to pay for our essential public services. And we're sort of in this broken model that you have to sort of destroy everything around you to sort of hang on to a few human services and everything else. And that way lies ruin. We're beginning to see that.
Gill stresses that Salmon Nation is not about undoing progress or rolling back the clock. In fact, Salmon Nation wants to move beyond pilot projects and bring serious capital and investment to work that is already being done in the spirit of Salmon Nation, if not in name.
So we're interested not in stopping things. We're interested in saying, okay, why doesn't capital, why doesn't politics, why doesn't community privilege people and activities that are actually making positive, regenerative contributions to the way we live our lives and the way we derive joy and satisfaction in our community.
And Gill and his associates believe that rural and indigenous edge communities are best positioned for the development and demonstration of this new approach to living, which is why this first ever gathering of Salmon Nation is in Sitka. Reporting in Sitka with help from Aaron Fulton, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Henry Leisha at KHNS in Haines, JoJo Phillips at KNOM in Nome, and Robert Woolsey at KCAW in Sitka. As we head into November, Americans start thinking about what they have to be thankful for. I am thankful for you, our listeners, and for the radio stations that air this program and make it possible for Alaskans to hear about commercial fisheries. I'm also thankful that I get a chance to produce the program and bring you a roundup of interesting and newsworthy fisheries reports from reporters from all over the state. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.